Now we're holding on Kufyur Aleph on the days, the fifth line from the end of the narrow lines, sixth line from the end of the narrow lines. We learned yesterday we had three different opinions on the subject of this that we're learning about the myths, the various mitzvahs to not delay or withhold a worker's wages, to pay him on the day or the night that he the day after or the night after or whatever that he worked. We talked about, does that apply to a regular goy who worships Avodah Zarah? Does it apply to a ger toshav? Does it apply to rental fees for behemoths or kalim? So we had three different opinions on the subject. Is it that we said that in our Mishnah, in our Mishnah we said that that behema and kalim you are over on all of them, and on the other hand with a ger toshav, then you're only over on one of them. Then we had a braisa. Then we had a braisa where the Tanakhama had said in the braisa, the Gemara is calling the Tanakhama over here Tanakhama Dimei Achecha, because the braisa that we quoted that has that Tanakhama's opinion begins with the word Me'achecha, darshaning the word Me'achecha from the pasuk, from the relevant pasuk in Parshas Kisetze. Anyway, that Tanakhama had held that with all of them, all of the Isurim of all of the various labs and esses apply to all of them, a ger toshav or behema and kelim. And according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, by a ger toshav, indeed, you only have some of them, but by and by behema and kelim also, you only have some of them. So we said you have three different opinions on the subject then of that. So now we were going through then where so we were going through where does the Tana of our Mishnah get his opinion from? And now we're continuing now we're continuing with the Tanoim in the Braisa, the Tanakama and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, where are they getting their respective opinions from? So six lines from the bottom, from the end of the narrow lines on Kufir Aleph Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, but Tanakama de Me'achecha. So now we finished off yesterday. We said that the Tana of our Mishnah and Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, which is who our Mishnah is following, holds that since the pasuk says since the pasuk says in this connection rei acha, don't wrong, don't hold back the wages for rei acha. So rei acha, your fellow yid, means not a ger tosha. We said on the other hand there was a ribui from the word itcha, which implies that anything that belongs to a fellow yid, and so we said behema and kalim, therefore according to that opinion, are included because and then you're over on all of them because after all they at least belong to re'acha. The ger toshav does not actually belong to re'acha. So now the Gemara says the Tanakama de'me'achecha hai re'acha mai avi. So what is the Tanakama of the braisa that begins me'achecha? What is he doing with the word re'ach? And the answer is Hahumi Boile. And for that matter, it's not just the question is not just on him. The question is on Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda as well. And in fact, there are Gersois that include him as well. Anyway, the answer is Hahumi Boile l'chidatanya. He uses it for what we learn in another Braisa, Re'acha v'loy Amaleki. That when it says Re'acha means not an Amaleki, which is actually that's a sensory change throughout throughout the next couple of lines when we use the word Amaleki. It's a change by the censor in earlier printed editions and in manuscripts. It says the word goy. So in other words, according to those Tanoim, according to the Tanoim of the Braisa, the word Re'acha is not meant to exclude a ger toshav, but rather it's meant to exclude a full-fledged goy, the kind of worships of Avodah Zarah, where with him there's no issur of withholding his wages. Now you do have, as we mentioned yesterday, there's an issue of Chilul Hashem involved, but where there's no such issue, then you would be allowed to. So the Gemara asks, Amaleki, me'achecha nafka. Are you telling me that you have to learn that from the word me'achicha, actually, is how it says in the pasuk. So are you telling me that so no, I, you know, it is me'achecha, yeah. So are you telling me we have to learn from me'achecha to exclude a goy? We don't need that. Or rather, sorry, I'm saying that wrongly. The question is, why do we need that? We have me'achicha nafka. You don't need the word, yeah, me'achicha nafka. You have the word re'acha, which we're saying, you're telling me that according to these Tanoim excludes a goy, but you also have the word me'achicha from among your brothers. And automatically that excludes them as well. So you don't need the word re'acha for that. So the Gemara says you actually do need both. Chad the Mishri Oishgoi, v'chad the Mishri Goizgoi. One tells us that you're allowed to have, you're allowed to do Oishek, where again, where he, you hired him for a job and now you're not paying him, or as we talked about yesterday, exactly what the definition of Oishek is, whether it's that you're delaying the payment when you have it, whether it's that and telling him come back another time, whether it's that you're telling him I already paid you, whether it's that you tell him that that I never hired you, whatever. So one would be to allow that, v'chad the Mishri Goizloi, and another one would Zeloi, and another one would be to allow actual gzela from him. Now, in Bava Kamma, we learned a whole sugya on the topic of whether gezel goy is mutter or not. We said there that, again, even according to the opinions that it is mutter, everybody agrees that if there's chil Hashem involved, then it's osir. So here we're talking about, according to these tanoim, we're saying that we need the word reyacha and we need the word me'achecha, and between the two of them, we learn that both oshek and gezel of a goy would be mutter, again, provided that there's no issue of chil Hashem. How that would be exactly, how it would be possible to do that without it being a chilul Hashem, I don't know, but let's say there is. Anyway, and the Gemara says, "Utsrichi," and in fact, we would need both of them. The iyash in and gzeloi, if we were only told a posik that refers to gzeloi, you would say, you know why, you're allowed mishum b'lai torach be, because after all, what are you talking about gezel? You're talking about something which the goy himself may not have earned, he may have well just inherited it or something, so therefore maybe the Torah has more make on it, and says that there's a certain loophole to take that away from him. Abel Oishkoi, but when it comes to wronging him by withholding the wages for his employment, the Torah Gabe, he worked hard for that. Emaloi, you would think maybe the Torah doesn't allow that. The Iyashmin and Oishkoi, on the other hand, if we were told you allowed Oishkoi, you would say we shouldn't be like Osiliyade. The fact is that money has not yet reached him. We're talking about money that he's earned but hasn't yet received. So maybe therefore the Torah would be makel on that. He hasn't received it yet. Therefore, you're allowed to avoid giving it to him. Avok zela to also the yadeh. But when you're talking about gezel, you're talking about something which is already in his possession. Eim aloy. Maybe there's no heter for it. Sricha, and therefore we would say you need both psukim. Strictly speaking, Tosfos says anyway we need both psukim because if we only had one of them, we would have thought that it refers only to gezel. Or we would have only said that it refers only to Oshik. So now we say that we have both of them. So we're saying Yemen and Inyan, so therefore we can use it for both of them. In any case, the point is, according to these Tanoim, that's why you need the word Reacha, and therefore they don't have the word Reacha available to teach us that when it comes to a Ger Toshav, that you're not over on all these three. Okay, so now over to Yossi Reb Yehuda. So now we said before that according to Yossi Reb Yehuda, when it comes to behemah of a kalim, again, unlike our Mishnah, because we started the sugya by pointing out that our Mishnah doesn't follow either the Tanna Kamma of that Baraisa or Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda. We're Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, who says that when it comes to behemah and kalim, you're only over on one issue of lois sashok if you withhold the rental fees for them. So according to him, so now let's go back to the pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim when it says, "Don't leave over the worker the wages of the worker with you until the morning." My Ovid Lay, what is he doing? What is he doing with that pasuk? So Rashi explains the question is, what is he doing with the itcha? Before we said according to the Tanna Kamma of the Braisa, or rather, according to the Tana of our Mishnah, we said the word itcha is coming to tell us that behema and kalim are, after all, itcha because they belong to a yid, and therefore all these mitzvahs apply to them. But Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it doesn't apply to all of them, so what is he doing with the word itcha? Now, Tosfos asks that the Gemara soon is going to, further on Kufyat Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to bring a number of drushes from that word itcha, so what do you mean, what is he doing with it? So then Tosfos says the question really is not so much on the word itcha, but why does it say the word sochir? Yesterday we said there's a gzeira shava on the word sochir. We said that the Tana of our Mishnah, the Tana Kama of the Braisa rather, learns from a gzeira shava on the word sochir that the same way as the isurim, as all the isurim apply to a regular yid, so they also apply to a ger toshav. But Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that. So what is he doing? So he doesn't use the word sochir for the gzeira shava. So then Tosfos says, that's the Gemara's question, what is he doing with that? So the answer is Mibola Khid Rav Asi. He uses it to teach us what Rav Asi says. The Amr Rav Asi, even if the employer had hired the worker to harvest only one bunch of grapes, over all of it, over Mishum Baltolin, then he's over on Baltolin, he's over on this mitzvah and all the other mitzvahs if he doesn't pay him in the proper time, the following day or the following night, as the case may be. So what's the chiddush in that? Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities. First of all, it means because, like this, the psukim are explicitly mentioning somebody who's hired for an entire day or for an entire night, as the case may be. Here, where you hire him to harvest one cluster of grapes, it's neither one. It's what we learned in the previous Mishnah as schir shos. He's been hired only for a certain number of hours. So therefore, we need to be told that nevertheless, these mitzvahs apply to him. And also, the point is, we learned previously in the seventh perek, when we had all the dinim about how the worker is allowed to eat on the job, we said you could have a scenario over there where he's hired to harvest one cluster of grapes, and he ends up eating that cluster, which we said according to the Tanakhama and the Mishnah, and that was the halacha. He is in fact allowed to do that. It's not a good idea. He may never find himself employment again, but he is allowed to. So then the point is that still the owner has to, still the employer has to pay him, and that would be the chiddush of it. So he learns that from this extra word itcha, or from the word sachir, as the case may be, according to Rashi or Tosfos. So the Gemara says ve'idach. Well, then the Tana of On Mishnah, who says instead that we're learning from that behem of a kalim yuchayev in all the mitzvahs. So where is he learning this case of where a person was hired only for a couple of hours, and where he only harvested one cluster and ate it? So the answer is ve'elav who noses nafshe nafka. He learns that from a different pasuk, that the pasuk that says in Kiseitse, it continues in the pasuk over there that you have to pay the worker on time because he's lifting up his soul to it, meaning bedover hamosa nafsha olav. So dover hamosa nafsha olav. So it applies to anything for which he's mosa nefesh. Anything for which he's setting aside what he wants to do. He would have liked to do something else with that time. Instead, he's setting that aside. Nafsha doesn't just mean his life; it means his desires. So he would have done something else with that time. Instead, he's doing this work for you. Therefore, you have to pay. The idach, well, Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, who learns from the word itach, or in Parshas Kedoshim, or from the word sachir in that same pasuk. So according to him, what does he do with the pasuk? The elav who knows serves nafshei, and the answer is mibahu mibayla lechadatanya. He uses that for what we learn in yet another brisa. When the pasuk says the elav who knows, Rashi brings this on the pasuk. The elav who knows serves nafshei. When it says he's lifting up his soul to it, and that means actually not just his desire, means that he's actually risking his life for it, and therefore, in other words, the Torah is stressing your responsibility to pay him on time. Meaning, you have to ask, the Braisa says, why, after all, did this worker do dangerous things, like going up on a high ramp? Where he could fall off, the nitla be'ilon, or he's hanging himself, he's suspending himself from a tree to pick the fruit. Isn't he doing it for his wages? So therefore, make sure you're paying him on time. An interesting side point that comes from this, by the way, is we see from this braisa, we see from this gemara, that a person is allowed to take on a job which is inherently risky. Because here we're saying over here, he's taking on jobs that are risky and where he could be risking his life, and nevertheless, it's allowed. So as much as we say, there is an exception for that, where it's necessary for purposes of parnasa. Anyway, so therefore, the Braisa says, and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda agrees, that's what we learn from the Eilav Hunoses Nafshei, not that we're learning another din from it, but rather that we're learning a rationale behind the mitzvah. Why do you have to be so careful to pay him by day, or by day or by night, as the case may be, shortly after he finishes the job, is because he even risked his life to do this work. Dovarach, then the Braisa continues another explanation.
There's a problem with that reasoning. Problem is that if the risk doesn't exist, you would be thinking and implying that he could be paid with delay.
No,
that's an issue.
Well, we're saying once you have that sometimes employment involves risk, then even when it doesn't, the same din still applies.
How do you
Because the POSIC has given you a typical example. The POSIC has given you a typical example. When you hire a worker, many times there can be that he goes even to the extent of risking his life. So we see, in other words, people will do anything in order to earn money. Therefore, even if this particular worker of yours did not, then nevertheless, you still have the same kliyut to him. But anyway, maybe that's why the Braisa continues with Dover Acher. Therefore, the Braisa brings another explanation, which actually will work even if the guy is not risking his life. So Dover Acher. Wait. Let's learn the next line, and then the Elav who knows says Nafshe. When the pasuk continues, he's lifting up his soul to it. Means kolakrivish schar socher. Anybody who holds back the wages of a worker, kilu noitel nafshe mimenu, is as if he's taking his life away from him. So that one doesn't apply only when he's risking his life. That one applies across the board. He's looking forward to that pay, and he's going to be disappointed if he doesn't get it. Again, as we learned before, it only applied. All these didn't apply only if he demanded his wages. So therefore, so the first explanation, you're right, is focusing on him risking his life. The second one is saying just he wants that pay, and therefore don't disappoint him.
Why do we need the first explanation if the second comes to cancel it?
Doesn't come to cancel it. There are two different ways of looking at it. Basically, you can look at it, does the word nafsha over here mean his life, or does it mean his desire? The word nefesh in Tanakh can have either meaning. So the first explanation takes nafsha in the sense of his life, that he's lifting up and risking his life for this job. The second one is saying that he's taking the word nafsha in the sense of his desire, that he has a desire for this money, for this pay, and that's why he hired himself out to you in the first place, and therefore make sure you don't disappoint him. So in this connection, the Rambam brings that if a person delays paying him, then he's over on a lav and an eser, and if he's kovish it, which we learned before, that kovish can mean that he doesn't pay him at all. Then he would be over on all the various lavim and eses that we said before. So in fact, Kesef Mishnah understands the Rambam exactly like that. If you want to pay him and you're just delaying him for later on, that would be one thing versus where you don't plan to pay him at all, or where you're deliberately withholding it in order to make the guy feel bad, that would be called kovish schar socher. So that would be when noitel is nafshei. That would be, it's considered as though you're taking away his life. The Kesef Mishnah understands in the Rambam. In other words, if it's just that you're delaying paying him, then that's not noitel is nafshei, because eventually you will pay him. So again, we said before that kovish can mean, and Rashi explains elsewhere that kovish means where he's delaying the guy, and oshik means where he's holding it back at all, as we learned in the Gemara yesterday. So when we say over here kovish, he's kilu noitel is nafshei, may well include also according to Rashi also if he's delaying. But yeah, two different ways of understanding these words ve'elav noitel is nafshei.
Why does the Braisa mentioning a greater risk of body injury doesn't come with two answers? Number one, he should be paid on time, and number two, he should have a greater pay because he's taking a greater risk. Why the Braisa doesn't mention
the greater pay? That would be as far as the greater pay. That would be have to be something that would be negotiated ahead of time. You know, when you take on the job, what the potential risks are. So fine, you know, if you want to negotiate for higher wages because it's risky, yeah, by all means. But that's not what we're dealing with over here, which is in terms of the boss having to pay on time.
Why we don't include that too? That's the question.
That's a separate issue. If they need to negotiate that ahead of time, then fine. That's something else. Okay. Let's go on. Maybe it'll become clearer as we go along. So the Gemara continues, Rav Huna v'Rav Chista. When we said this pasuk, kilu noitel nafshei, there was actually a machloikas Rav Huna and Rav Chista. We learned this at the very end of Bava Kama as well. What does it mean? Who's nefesh? Chadom a nafshei shal gazlan v'chadom a nafshei shal nigzal. One says that when we say kilu noitel nafshei mimenu, between Rav Huna and Rav Chista, one says it means the life of the gazlan, or in this case, the one who withholds the wages. That he's causing, in other words, ve'elav u'noisa esnafshe, we can also understand to mean not just that the person himself, the worker himself, is expecting the pay and is going to be disappointed if you don't give it to him, but it also means that failure to give it to him can have effects on the employer's own life, that Hashem may take away his life from him in punishment for that. B'chadama, the other one says, nafshe shel nigzal, it's considered as though he took away the other person's life. Manda omen nafshe shel gazlan, the opinion that says, that it means the life of the gazlan. He says, based on a pasuk in Mishlei, al tigzal dol, the pasuk says, don't steal from the poor. Now, obviously, you can't steal from anybody, but it means, in other words, especially somebody who's poor and needs the money very badly and is going to feel really bad if he's missing it. Ki dalhu, because he's poor, especially because he's poor, or even if he's poor and you think therefore you're going to get away with it, don't do it. Rashi points out, as we've learned before, the word ki has multiple meanings, and one of them can be even though. So even if, im, e is one of the four meanings of ki. So here it means if, even if. So don't steal from him, even if he's poor and you think you're going to get away with it, or precisely because he's poor and therefore he's going to feel bad about it, other mafoshim learn, whatever. Ba'al tadake oni bashar, and don't crush the poor person in the gate, meaning in the gate is where dinei Torah take place. And the pasuk continues, Uchtiv, the next pasuk continues, Ki Hashem yoriv ribam, because Hashem will fight on their behalf, v'kovas kev ehem nafesh, and he will rob the soul from those who rob them. So you think, in other words, you're going to be able to get away with stealing from a poor person, but you should realize that that's causing, that the person who does that is causing that Hashem is going to punish him by taking away his own life. So therefore, elavu noises nafshei, therefore can refer to that. The opinion that says that's considered as though he's taking away the life of the one from whom he stole. He says also you have a pasuk in Mishlei. Kain orchus kobetzea botza. The pasuk gives a metaphor over there, like birds that find grain in a trap, and they don't realize there's a trap there. They think, hey, free grain for the taking, and then they end up getting caught in the trap. So the same way when people think that they can steal and get away with it, the pasuk says, don't. But Kain Orchis Kobet Seabotza, these are the ways of everybody who steals, as Nefesh Ba'ol of Yikach, they take away the life of its owner. So meaning, in other words, on the face of it, it means the owner of the, whoever was the owner of the money or of the property until now, and now you're taking it away from him. So therefore, so it's considered as though you're taking away his life. So the Gemara says, "V'idach nami yaksivas nefesh ba'ol of yikach." The first opinion that said that it's considered that Hashem takes away the life of the one who stole. What does he do with the pasuk as nefesh ba'ol of yikach, which implies that it's the soul, it's the life of the nigzal that he's taking away? The answer is because exactly that. Ba'olav doesn't mean the original owner of the money, according to him. It would mean ba'olav dahashta, the current owner of the money, meaning, in other words, that Reuven had money, Shimon stole it from him. Well, now Shimon is the owner of that money. So and therefore, in Shlomo's warning, you should know, as nefesh ba'ol of yikach, Shimon, Hashem may take away your life, because now you've made yourself the owner of this property or this money or whatever it is that you took away from Reuven, and therefore it still fits with the idea that it means that Hashem will take away the gazlan's life. Meaning, in other words, therefore, so we understand the pasuk a little differently. So it's not, we're saying that, like the birds who see the grain in the trap over there, and they think free food for the taking. It means you have to consider the continuation of that metaphor. What happens? The bird ends up getting trapped and losing its life the same way you think you're going to gain from stealing, but you lose more than you gain. What about the idach nami, the other opinion that said that the pasuk is saying that nafshe shel nigzal, that it's considered like stealing the nigzal's life? Haksiv v'kavas kaveim nafesh. What did he do with the pasuk in Mishlei, elsewhere in Mishlei, that says that Hashem will rob the soul from those who rob? And the answer is matam karma. According to him, the pasuk is actually giving, in those few words, is giving a reason. Mat, you have to break up the phrase. Matam kovas kaveim. Why will Hashem rob the robber from the robber? Mishum denotu nefesh, because they took away a soul. Matam kovas kaveim. Mishum denotu nefesh, because they took a soul, because they took somebody else's life. Anyway, the point is, so they're all darshaning, so they can all darshan the words ve'elav u'noseis nafshei in that vein. You can't learn dinim from psukim in Mishlei. Okay, we're not learning dinim over here per se, but still, the concept that's expressed in these various psukim in Mishlei is being hinted at in this pasuk over here, ve'elav u'noseis nafshei, and therefore they can say from that, you're not learning from that necessarily the halacha that, even if you hired a worker for only that you can't necessarily learn the halacha from that, that even if that 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 any time you hire a person, he's anything that most of Nafsha Olam, even you hired him for only one cluster of grapes, then you still have to pay him on time. But rather, we can learn that from the words. We can learn from the words. Ve'elav who knows says Nafsha, either that he's putting his own life at risk to do the work, or that there's a risk to life if the wages are withheld, namely a risk to the Gazlan's life or to the Nigzal's life, as the case may be, just by holding back the wages. Okay, so the point is, therefore, so we have a drasha that we use the words ve'elav or noses nafshei for. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda would say that we learn that from those words rather than the Tana of our Mishnah. The Tana of our Mishnah is learning ve'elav or noses nafshei, that even you hired a person only for a very short term job, you still have to pay him right away. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda says you don't need that. That you can learn from the word itcha or from the word sach. So that's that. So now we've covered the three different opinions on the subject, where each of them is learning his opinion from. In the end, as it usually is, the halacha is like a stam mishnah, and so it is over here. So when it comes to schar odom and schar behema and schar kelim, either way, all of the isurim, all the mitzvahs, and all the isurim apply. On the other hand, a ger toshav, you only have the one, v'yoyma titin schorah, that you have to pay him on the day, you don't have the rest of the yisurim by him, and when it comes to a goy who's oivid abadazara, then technically you don't even have any of these mitzvahs at all. In fact, oshik and gezel of him would maybe even be mutter, except that you have to take into consideration the matter of chilul Hashem. Now we said in the Mishnah. Amasai. We said, when does all this apply? Was mancha tvoi only when the employee demanded the wages? Loi tvoi ain't over all of. But if you didn't yet demand or ask for them, then you're not over. As we talked about yesterday, there are Rishonim who learn, and based on the Zohar, it seems that even if he doesn't ask for them, you still have some of these concepts apply. You still have. You have one thing that you're getting out of, because as the Gemara is going to learn over here, you have from Lois Solon, Pu'ulas Socher, there it specifically implies that he asked for it. But the other mitzvahs may well apply, or even if they don't strictly speaking apply, they at least apply in some sense even if he didn't ask for it. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. When the pasuk says lois solin pa'ulas socher, don't allow the wages of the worker to stay by you overnight. Yochal afilu lo tvoi. You would think that applies even if the guy doesn't ask for the wages. Tamalami itcha. Therefore, the pasuk says itcha, which implies l'daitcha, only if you know about it. Now, if he didn't come and ask you for the wages, you may not realize, you may not remember even. Or not so much you may not remember, we're going to talk about that point later, but rather that you're not deliberately withholding his wages because you're as opposed to daitoi. So when he hasn't asked you for it yet, then it's when he asked you for it and you're not paying, then you know that you haven't paid and you know your reasons for that. But when he hasn't even asked for that yet, then it means in effect that it means l'daitcha v'lo l'daitoi, means when he hasn't asked for it yet, means he himself implicitly is saying, I'm willing to wait for the delay. And therefore, there's no issur. Yochal afilo ein loy. Now, you would think that there's an issur even if the employer does not actually have what to pay with. Tamal lami itcha, that's another thing. We learned from the word itcha that it means only when sheyesh itcha, that you have the money available with you. And another one, yochal afilu himchoyu etzochemini ve'etzolshochani. You would think the same din applies even if he referred him, even if he said, instead of me paying you, you're going to go, as we learned in the Mishnah yesterday, you're going to go to so-and-so, the storekeeper or the money changer, and you're going to do business with him on my account. You would think that also then he's over if he doesn't give him in time. Tamad lemme itcha, again, that's another thing. We learn from the word itcha, v'loy shehim cho etzochemini ve'etzolshochani, as opposed to when he referred him to the chenveni or the shulchani, where then it's not itcha. Now the responsibility for paying him is not itcha, is not with you anymore. And therefore you're not over. So you have several different cases where you're not over. all of which we learn from the word itcha. So now let's discuss that point further. We said that if he referred him to the storekeeper or the money changer, so then we said the employer was not over, even if they didn't give him in time. So now the question is, fine, we're saying that so far, if they didn't give him in time, then nobody's over. But what about now afterwards? Does the employee have the ability to come back to the balabais and say, look, they didn't give me, so therefore now it's back on you, and you have to give it to me, and then the balabais is going to be chayav to pay them? Oy ein chozer, or maybe not. Maybe even if the storekeeper didn't give him, then maybe he doesn't have the ability to return to the balabais. He's still, if anything, he's going to have to deal with the chenveni and eventually get him to pay. So Tosfos actually discusses at some length over here a number of possibilities. If to begin with the employee says, look, I'm patuing you, the employer, completely, whether he gives me or not, then obviously ain't a chozer. He was moichel at that point. On the other hand, if he says I'm patuing you if the other guy pays me, then of course chozer, because look, if the other guy doesn't pay him, then obviously. So the first thing Tosfos says is we have to be talking about over here where you just told him stop. He said, fine, you know, you're telling me go to the storekeeper or go to the money changer. Fine, you know, I'm willing to rely on that. But he's not explicitly saying, anything about what happens if they don't pay. And then further on, Tosfos talks about a couple of other possibilities. When he says, I'm soimach on him, maybe that's considered a mechila. Maybe the Gemara is taking up the possibility. Maybe that's considered now that in effect he's moichel the balabais for it, and therefore that it means that he implicitly that he's only going to collect from the storekeeper. And then you have a number of possibilities. In fact, the Gemara may also mean another possibility. Tosfos brings up, sure, of course he has the ability to return to the balabais. He has to get his pay somehow. The question really, when we say chozer or any chozer, would be more on the isurim that we've been talking about throughout this sugya. Would the balabais again then be over on that now that he had referred him to the chenveni or the shulchani, and in the end they didn't come through? Is anybody over at this point now that they're not coming through? So the question according to that wouldn't be so much can he come and collect his pay from one or the other of them, but rather is anybody over on Baal Tovin? So a bunch of different ways that Tosfos has to explain what the Gemara is saying to me. And then Tosfos in general gets into issues involving when you have mechila, what exactly is needed for mechila to be effective? Do you need pinyan? Do you just need edim? Do you need nothing at all? Incidentally, by the way, when we learned in the Mishnah, all of these cases that we're talking about in the Mishnah about the worker being able to collect, when we learn later in the Mishnah, and we're going to discuss on other days, the point that the socher is able to swear that he hasn't been paid yet and collect on that basis, Tosfos points out that we have to be talking about where we have evidence, we have edim, that he was hired by the other guy. Otherwise, the guy may have a migger. He can say, I never hired you, therefore instead, he could say, I paid you. So here we're talking about there is evidence that he was hired by him. So now, again, the question would be then, what exactly is does he have the ability now that he had agreed and been moichel that fine, I'll go and collect from the storekeeper or whatever? Does he have the ability now to say, well, the storekeeper didn't pay me, therefore the responsibility is back on you or not? Or again, according to Tosfos, various possibilities. One possibility is, of course, he can. The question is whether, if the employer doesn't pay him, is he over on Baal Tolin and the rest of the mitzvahs over here? So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes Omer Ein Chozer, V'Rabba Omer Chozer. So it's a machlokes. Omer Rabba Menoah Min Alah. So Rabba says, where do I get that Chozer that he couldn't come back and demand it? Mid Katoni, because the Mishnah had said, Ein Over Olav. It said that if he referred him to a storekeeper, he's not over. Implying Mi'Ever Hu Deloy Over. At that point, by telling him to go to the storekeeper, he hasn't been over on anything. Homi Hader Hader, but implying that the employee is still entitled to go back to the employer and collect his pay. Rav Sheshes says no, because my ain't over, when the Mishnah says he's not over, just means ain't a betora slaver, means the whole concept of being over doesn't yet apply, isn't going to apply anymore, because he referred him to a third party and the other guy was agreeable to that. So it doesn't mean ein oiver, like you rabba say, means as of now you weren't oiver, but later on you might be. No, it means that now, having referred him to the storekeeper, it's never possible to be oiver again. The post can pass him like rabba, and therefore that would and therefore the result would be that in fact poison. Okay. Now the Gemara says, "Bo mi name Rav Sheshes." They asked Rav Sheshes a related question: "Kablonus over all of Mishum Baltolin, over all of Mishum Baltolin. What about if you hire somebody not as a, like this we've been talking about all this time, a person who's hired for a certain amount of time, whether for a few hours, whether for a day, a week, etc. Now, what about though? We talk about a person who's hired to do by the job. He's a contractor. Instead of being paid by the hour or by the day or whatever, he's being paid for the entire job. So the question would be, does Baltolin apply to him? Do we consider him like a hired worker, or do we not? Do we say, in other words, so basically the question can be taken in one of two ways. In other words, do we say that we could say that the question is whether he's considered like a hired worker or not. Or another way of looking at it is basically, well, the Gemara is going to go on to say now that the question is whether when you hire somebody like that to do a job for you, and he's improving something for you, maybe it's considered that in effect he was koina the thing that you gave him, and now you're buying it from him. Well, in that case, it's considered more like a loan or something, and in that case, you don't have all these things. A baltolin apply only to a hired worker. So the question is, uman koine b'shvachli, do we say that when a craftsman, when, for example, you give him wood, let's say, and he makes a piece of furniture out of it, or you give him metal and he makes jewelry out of it or whatever, do we say that he's koine the keli with the improvement that he added to it? So now later, therefore, when you pay him for it, in effect, you're buying that thing from him. So now it's like you're buying it from him, and therefore, so you know it's not considered that you hired him, and therefore there's no, and therefore these yisurim don't apply. V'halva, he therefore in effect, if he delays paying him, it's considered like he borrowed money from him, and therefore these yisurim don't apply. Or maybe the craftsman does not acquire the keli by virtue of having improved it, and therefore schirasi, and therefore this would be considered, and therefore this could be would be considered an actual schiros, so it would be considered that you actually hired him, and therefore the Isurim of Baltolin and the rest of them would apply. So there is actually, we learned a Gemara in Bava Kamma that learned the question in a different way. The question is, was also, what about if there's no shvach involved? Is kablonus inherently considered like schiros, or is it that it's really a completely different kind of thing, and the whole concept of Baltolin doesn't apply? But over here, the Gemara is taking it in the sense that we're talking about where there was improvement, and the question was, is he koine it without improvement or not? So that was the question. Omlahu Rav Sheshes over. So Rav Sheshes says to them, he is in fact over, because we say that if we take the perspective from the Gemara in Bava Kamma, we're saying he is considered like any other kind of hired worker. And if you take the perspective from the Gemara over here, that it's talking about whether the Uman is koine the keli or not, the answer is he is not, and therefore, it's not considered that you're buying the keli from him. It's considered that you hired him for the job. So the Gemara asks, "Val Tanya Eina Oiver." We learn in a Braisa that a kablon is not, that with a kablon you're not over. And the answer is Hosim Shem Cho. It's Ochen when he made a Shochani. That's talking about, like we said earlier in the Mishnah, where he referred him to the storekeeper or to the money changer to collect his pay, and therefore, as we said in our Mishnah, you're not over at that point. But now, but Rav Sheshes is talking about where you didn't. And in fact, there's an explanation. The Mayoni HaChochma explains that the Gemara now is understanding that the word kablon maybe doesn't mean that you hired him as a kablon, but rather Melosh Kibol, that he accepted on himself that he's going to receive his pay in this form rather than directly from the owner. So the Gemara says, "Name him a Sile." Can we say that we can support what Rav Sheshes says based on the following Braisa? Braisa says, "A noisin talisi l'uman." Person gives his talus to a craftsman to fix it, to improve it or whatever. Gomra v'hodiyah, the craftsman finished the job and informed him that it's ready. Afilu mikan v'ad asara yamim, even if the guy delays by as much as 10 days picking it up, ain't over mishum baltolin, then he's not over on baltolin for failing to pay for it. So because, again, we say that's considered in effect by him having the talus in his possession, it's considered that he has a mashkin on it. So then, and when he has a mashkin, then you don't have an issur of bal talis. But if you gave it back to him in the middle of the day, then as soon as the sun sets, over Mishum Baltolin, then he's over on Baltolin, or strictly speaking, on Loisova Olav Hashemesh, because at that point he's let the rest of the day go by without paying. Now, the E Amit Uman Koinim Shvach Kli, if you're going to tell me that the craftsman is Koin of the Keli by virtue of the Shvach that he adds there, am I over? Then why would there be any issue? Therefore, this Braisa seems to support Rav Sheshes' point that we don't say Oman Koinu B'Shvachli, and therefore we say it's considered that you hired him for the job. So Mela, as long as he has the talus in his possession, then fine. You could say at least he has a mashkin on it. But if you returned it, then you're saying immediately the clock starts ticking for Bal Tolin. So that shows that it's not that he was Koine, now he sold it to you, and now it's considered as though in effect you owe him money, you owe him for a loan, and Bal Tolin wouldn't apply to that. No, we're saying Bal Tolin does apply. But the Gemara says it's not really a solid proof. Omer of Mori, Breda de Kana, Begauda de Sarbala. Because we're not talking about necessarily over here where you hired the guy to make a talus for you or to fix it, to sew up ripped areas or whatever in it. We can be talking about, for example, that you gave it to him to comb it, to fluff it up. Now what you have is, so he does that, he takes a comb and combs down the surface of the garment. Now, that actually, there's no shvach over there, because in fact, that shortens the life of the beggar, because you're combing it, therefore you're removing it in effect, and in the course of that, you're going to be removing fibers from it, and therefore you weaken the structure of it. So therefore, you can't say there's any shvach, so we can't talk about umen koine b'shvachli. Well, the Gemara asks, why not? Lamai yav and niyaleh. After all, why'd you give it to the guy to comb it for you? You want lorakuchi. You wanted him to comb it and then fluff it up in order that it'll be softer. Well, then hainu shvache. Well, there itself is the shvach. Sure, you're shortening the life of it. But the fact is, you want it this way because that way it'll warm you up better. So therefore, so sure, it should be considered like any other shvach. And the answer is loitzricha. The answer is that the chiddush would be, that the case of the braisa could be where he hired the guy to press down, to tread down on the garment. So in other words, it actually says, forget about the idea that we were talking about that you hired him to comb the garment and fluff it up. We're talking about an earlier stage than that. When you first get the garment, you take it, Rashi described, you take the keli, you put it in a, you take the clothing, you put it in a wooden bucket together with water and together with a certain kind of earth, and you tread on it in there. That makes it, it firms up the cloth. It makes it like, it makes the cloth a little stiffer and makes the cloth a little stiffer. But we're not talking about a kablon over there. You're talking about bacho b'masa. What you do is you tell him, however many times you tread on it, you're going to be paid a ma for each treading. So therefore, so regardless whether there's shvach or not, you're paying him for the number of times he's treading on it, and therefore, therefore, yes, Bal Tolin is going to apply to that. So this braisa does not necessarily prove Rav Sheshes' point that where it's a kablon, then you're also over on Bal Ta'acha, because maybe we're not talking about a kablon. Maybe we're not talking about a kablon at all. Maybe we're talking about a socher where you hire him but not by the hour or whatever, but rather by the number of times he treads on it. Tosfos actually in Baba Kama brings an explanation that no, we are talking about this is kablonos as well. But Tosfos mentions over there, we can be talking about, let's say, what about if you fail to pay him in time for the very first time that he treads on it? Where there, that one, he hasn't yet really caused a shvach. Only later on, as he treads on it more and more, then he's bringing about shvach. So therefore, so you could say that maybe that first one has not really created any shvach, and therefore you could argue that maybe he's not over on Bal Tolin with that, or maybe he is. So that wouldn't necessarily show in the case of kablonus where you could say that the braisa may be telling us that he's over on everything except the first one, because Because maybe, in fact, we don't say that Uman Koni B'Shvach. Well, we could say, no, we'd say Uman Koni B'Shvach. Uman is not Koni B'Shvach Kli. But again, at this point, there's no Shvach to talk about when it comes to that first treading. So according to Tosfos, again, the point is that we may be talking about a Kabbalan after all, but it's still not a solid proof for what Rav Sheshes is saying. Nevertheless, the halacha is like Rav Sheshes, that with a Kabbalan, there is also Baltach. There is also Baltach. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Socher b'zmanu nishva v'noitel. We said when it's the time, when it's during the time when the worker is supposed to be paid, and he hasn't been paid yet. So again, as we learned in the Mishnah, we said that if the worker finishes during the day, then the owner has the rest of that day, has the worker finishes at the end of the day, then you have that entire following night to pay him. And if he works during the night, then if he works all night, then you have the entire following day to pay him. So during that time, we said if the worker has not claims that he hasn't been paid, then he swears in Beis Din and he collects the his payment. So this is where Tosfos mentions that we have to be talking about where there's Edim, that he was hired in the first place. Otherwise, the other guy would have a mikvah. The Gemara actually mentions this in Shavuos. Most of what we're going to learn on this daf, on this Almud over here, is actually going to be also in the Gemara in Shavuos. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Amai takinu le'rabbanon le'mishtav v'shokil." Why did the Chachamim make such a takana that the worker should swear and collect? Usually, minat Torah, all the cases of swearing are to be potter. So the Chachamim should have left well enough alone and said that, and then said that the employer should be swearing that he paid and be potter. So why instead are we saying that the socher should swear and collect, which is something unusual? We've shown him talk about, by the way, that not necessarily would the employer be in a position to have to swear in the first place. If he's koi for hackle, then midaraisa, he's not swearing. Later on, in the middle of the time of the Gemara, they came up with the concept of Shavuos Heses, but the Mishnah, it was written when the Mishnah was composed before that. So we're talking about, let's say that he's Mojib Amitzas. But anyway, so the question is, why is that? So Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, halachas gdolos shonu kan. The Chachamim have taught over here in our Mishnah great halachas. This is there's a series of halachas in Masechet Shavuos that talk about the number of cases that the Chachamim said that even though midaraisa, the whole concept of swearing is to be potter, the Chachamim set up a number of cases that said where instead you swear and you collect. So this is one of them. So the Gemara asks, first of all, what's the expression halachas? Are these halachas? In Gemara terminology, the word halachas means more narrowly halachas l'moshe misinai. These are not halachas l'moshe misinai. These are takonas of the Chachamim. So the word halachas is not really appropriate for them. So the Gemara answer is, you're right. So the question is, hani hilchas ninu, hani takonas ninu. They're takonas. Okay, elam rabbi hod amishmo takonas gdolos shonuka. Fine, that's how the wording is supposed to be. Not halachas gdolos, but rather takonis gdolos. The Chacham made great important takonis in this connection. Well, the Gemara still asks, gdolos m'klal de'ik tanois. So when we say big ones, that implies that there are other small ones. Now there are lots of other takonis that the Chacham made because they're really badly needed. Tosfos points out that the question really is, because it says takonis gdolos shtonu kan, here, in this connection, the Chachamim made great takonis, implying that all the other takonis are only katanis, but how is that? There are lots of other takonis that deserve the word katanis, that deserve the word dolus as well. So the Gemara says, you're right, Ela Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Shmuel, so rather Rav Nachman quoted in the name of Shmuel a little differently than the way Rabbi Hodad said it, takonis kvuis shanukan, means the Chachamim set up over here, fixed takonis. These are takonis that are important enough to even override something minat Torah for it. Minat Torah, you only have swearing in order to be potter. The Chachamim found it necessary in this and several other similar cases that it talks about in Masechta Shavuos, where the Chachamim found it necessary to make an important enough, the Chachamim consider it important enough to override the din of the Torah and to say that we're going to have cases where you swear and collect. There are Rishonim, in fact, to learn, interestingly, the Rimi Gash and others point out the word Kova, the Shurdish Kuf Beis Ayin, we learned on Omar Aleph, can also mean to rob. We have the Kova as Kaveim Nafesh. We have an example of it in Malachi as well. So therefore it means, in effect, the Chachamim are ready to make a takana over here to even like rob, to like override and remove from its place the concept of the Torah that you only swear in order to be potter from paying because it was so necessary in cases like this, as the Gemara is going to work out now, to allow a person to swear and collect in certain cases. So that's another reason why we use the word kavuos, not just fixed in place, but also like as if they've robbed and removed from their place a concept that the Torah says about the mechanism of how a shavuah works. So in other words, the Gemara says, shavuah de balabayasi, in principle, the shavuah ought to have been on the balabayas. And Tosfos, by the way, mentions that the plural, takonos kavuos, is because this isn't the only case. There's a number of other cases that the Mishnah mentions there in Shavuos, where we have that a person swears and collects. So therefore we call them kavuos in the plural. So here we're focusing on the Sochir. When we get to Masech the Shavuos next year, Bez Hashem, or a year and a half from now, whatever it is, then we'll discuss all the other ones. Anyway, the point is, we're saying Shaklua Rabbonin, Shavuah de Balabayas, the Shavuah in principle ought to be on the Balabayas, at least in some cases, where he's Modu Mitzas, for example, as Tosfos says, Va'akrua Rabbonin, the Shavuah de Balabayas, the Chachamim uprooted the Shavuah from the Balabayas for Shadua Asochir, and they imposed it on the Sochir, that he should swear and collect mishum kedei chayav de socher, because the socher, the employee, needs the money for his livelihood. So therefore, the chachamim gave him a break and said that he can swear and collect. Well, the Gemara asks, that's very nice. We want to do something nice for the socher, but mishum kedei chayav de socher mafsadna le the balabayas, is that a reason to cause the balabayas to lose out? Why shouldn't the balabayas still be able to say, look, you're claiming money from me? So like any other case, let's say of Modu B'Mitzas, I'm claiming that I owe you X amount. You're saying I owe you more. Let's treat it like any other case of Toyin V'Nitan, and I'll swear and I'll be potter. Why are we imposing instead? We're saying, brother, that the socher can swear, and therefore the balabayas is going to pay. And what happens if he's overpaying for something? So the answer is balabayas gufa nichale, because actually the balabayas himself would appreciate this arrangement. The mishtaba socher v'shokil, that the socher should be able to swear and be able to collect, ki hefe de la tagrule poyalim, because this employer in the future wants to be able to find workers who work for him. Now, if he is able to get away with a shavuah, with not paying them, then in the future workers are going to say to themselves, why should we bother working for this guy? He's going to be forgetful. He's going to be whatever, and he's going to claim that he paid us, and he's going to swear. And then we're not going to get our pay. What good? The swearing is not going to buy us food in the store or whatever. So therefore, nobody's going to want to work for him. So therefore, the balabayas himself realizes that it's in his best longer term interest to allow this particular sucker to swear and collect. And that way, in the future, other potential employees will know that yes, we know we have a way that we know this guy is going to end up paying us one way or the other. Either he'll remember himself and give it to us, or if he claims that not, then we have recourse in basting. Well, the Gemara asks, well, you could say the other way around as well. Socher gufa nichale de mishtaba balabayas v'yifka. You could argue the other way around. The socher would prefer that the balabayas should swear and be potter. Ki hecha de ligruhu, because you have the opposite. The employee wants to be able to find in the future people who are willing to employ him. Same idea. In other words, what's going to happen in reverse? If the socher is going to be able to swear and collect, then in the future, other people are going to say, why should we hire this guy? Look, what does he do? He goes and frivolously takes the other guy to Basin and swears and collects his salary double. So why we don't want to employ this guy in the first place? So you could argue that the socher himself has an incentive to want the balabayas to be able to swear. Yes, he may lose out this time that he doesn't get his pay, but on the other hand, at least according to his claim, but he gains in the future that other people will be willing to employ him. And the Gemara answers, balabayas al koche oga. Because no matter what, look, the balabayas, no matter what, in the future is going to need workers. So therefore, he has the bigger incentive to make sure that he's an employer that people are going to want to work for. So again, he may be more willing to take the chance that, fine, let this particular socher swear, even it may be that I'm paying him twice, but at least this way in the future, I'm more guaranteed to get workers and I'm going to need workers on an ongoing basis after all. Well, the Gemara says the flip side of it is also socher nami bal koche itkar nu, and the employee also has to make sure that he's that he's an employee of the type that people are going to want. He also is going to need to be hired out again and again in order to earn a living. So again, it's almost like game theory here, like which one has the bigger incentive to, which one has the bigger incentive over here to make sure that everything is done right. So no, so that reason doesn't really work as the reason why we should say that the socher swears, because if you argue that it's in the Baal HaBayis best interest, but you could counter argue that it's in the socher's best interest to do it the other way. So Ella, no, there's a different reason. The reason why the socher is nishba v'noito, Baal HaBayis toter b'poilim, because the Baal HaBayis is busy with his workers. He may have lots of workers. It's hard for him to keep track of whom he's paid and whom he hasn't. Meaning, Tosfos says, therefore, in effect, when he says, I didn't pay you, it's considered as if he says, I don't know whether I owe you. We don't even need the answer that we said before, that Tosfos had said before, that we consider him Moedu Mitzas. When he says, I didn't pay you, we would always consider that a Tainas Shema, I'm not sure if I paid you, and therefore, in that case, he can't swear. So in that case, the Socher is swearing. There's a big discussion among Rishonim. Do we still keep the answer Mishum Kedei Chai ever before? Are we still using that answer? What about if the boss is not toted b'payalav? Maybe you need both reasons to say that why the socher is swearing. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara asks Yehochi, if that's the case, if you're saying the owner is busy with his workers, and therefore we can't trust him to say that he paid, and he may have actually forgotten whether he did, nasev lebelo shavua, then he ought to be paying the guy even without a shavua, because basically you have a bodhi versus a shema claim. So Tosfos asks the question. I mean, so what are we expecting? The Baal HaBayis is always going to forget. But the point is that we're saying over here it's very often we're going to assume it's highly likely that the owner is going to forget. And therefore, it should be always considered, like he says, any day. Whenever he says, I didn't pay you, we should always consider it as though he's saying he doesn't know. So why don't we say that the socher should be able to collect without a shavua? And the answer is, you're right. The reason is in order to make the Baal HaBayis feel better. He shouldn't think that he's being taken advantage of. So therefore, we make the socher swear. So the Gemara asks, why do the Chachamim need to do that? Instead of making a takana of a shua, let the Chachamim make a takana that the boss should pay the employee only with Edim. And if he chooses to pay with, and there's no Edim around, then that's his problem. And now, if the other guy claims that he hasn't been paid, then he should be able to collect without a shua, because we would tell the Baal HaBayis, well, why didn't you get Edim who will testify that you actually paid him? And the answer is trichaluhumil, so that would be too much of a burden. Every time you have to pay your employees, you have to make sure that you have Edom around. It would be too much of a hassle. Therefore, the Chum didn't want to do that. Well, the Gemara asks, okay, another possibility, v'nesiv le'me'ikra. Why? Again, the question is, why are the Chachamim doing this thing of making an unusual kind of shvur like this to swear and collect where midaraisa, you have no such thing? We have to find the Chachamim would have had when the Chachamim find no other way out of it, then we're going to have to say we're going to have to do it that way. But we'd rather find other ways of doing it that avoid making an unusual shvur like that. So why don't we? So the question then is why instead don't we make a takana that the Baal HaBayis should pay him the nesav le'me'ikra? He should be paying him from the beginning before he even starts the work. And the Rebbe Migash adds the point over there: before, when he starts the work, he's not toted b'poilav, he's not busy with his workers yet. Therefore, we can't say that he's going to have forgotten. So we should say that he should give him the pay at the beginning. And therefore, now later on, if the socher says, I haven't been paid, then it won't be a bodhi versus shema claim like we said before. So the Gemara says, no, shneim roitzim ba'kofa. Both of them would appreciate that the payment is delayed until the end. Because the Baal HaBayis may not have money at the beginning of the day, and the worker may be concerned that if you give him the money in the morning, then he's going to lose it sometime during the day while he's working. So therefore, so both of them would actually prefer not to do like that. They'd prefer that it's paid at the end of the day. Well, then at the end of the day, the Baal HaBayis is toted b'poilav, and the worker is not. So the Gemara says, Yehochi, well, if so, then we're saying that the reason has to do with toted b'poilav, I feel a kotzatz nami. Shouldn't all of this din apply even if they discussed an actual amount of how much he's going to pay him. We would say that no matter what, if the argument is not, did you pay me or not? The argument is, how much did we agree on? Then we would say, on the face of it, if Balabai is totally repulsive, the same way as he may forget whether he paid this employee or not, the same way he may forget how much exactly they made up. So we would say the same kind of thing. If the worker claims that you said you're going to give me X amount per hour or whatever, and the Balabais says it was less, we should say the same kind of thing. The Balabais should be considered only a Shema claim, and the Socher should have a Bade claim, and we should have the same din that he swears and collects the larger amount. Aloma Tanya. So why indeed? Why do we learn in a Braisa and not like that? Where the Braisa says Umen Oimeshtayim Katzatzali. Suppose that the craftsman says, you agreed with me, you're going to pay me 2 sloim, or 2 whatever kind of coin for my work, and the Balabais says, I arranged with you only 1, then we say, then we don't say that the sucker swears and collects the 2, then we say, you want to collect the 2, and it's not a matter of giving a shivua. So we see it's not always a case just because the Balabais is forgetful. So the answer is Tzitzavade Mitchud Chirule Inchi. The difference is when it comes to Tzitza, when we establish an actual price for the job, then that's the kind of thing somebody will remember. Whether we paid the worker or not, that might be something that slips his mind. But when you're talking about when they arranged 1 versus 2, then we expect that the Balabais would actually remember how much he arranged. And therefore, so now it's a Bodhi versus Bodhi claim, and therefore you have the usual concept of a Mutz Mechve Levaray. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Okay, so what are we saying so far? The whole concept is based on Balabais Toter Bepoyla, but the owner is that the Balabais is busy with his workers, and therefore he may forget. Well, if all of that is the case, then all of these dinim should apply even after the time. So it shouldn't just apply during the day or the night grace period when the Balabais has to pay. It should apply after that as well. We would say Balabais toted b'poylov, and he doesn't remember whether he paid, and the socher knows he hasn't been paid, and therefore he should swear. Why do we say in our Mishnah, Overzmana in Anishpa v'noito, we said that if it's after the time, then he does not swear and collect. So why not? And the answer is chazaka in Balabais over Mishum Baltolin, because we have a chazaka that the Balabais is not going to want to be over on Baltolin on all these mitzvahs that we said before. So therefore we can be sure that he would be careful enough to pay during that time. Well, the question is, Va'amit Balabais told him a poil of who? You just said he's busy with his workers and he may not remember whether he paid or not. So he may not remember that he may not remember whether he's being over or not. The answer is Hani Mili Mekama Delimti is Man Chiyuv. Sure, that's before the time of the Chiyuv comes, but before the deadline comes, then he may be forgetful. Avol Mot is Man Chiyuv, but once it comes the time of the Chiyuv where he's going to be over on Bal Ta'achar, Romi Anafshi Umitko, he's going to put it to mind and remember, did I pay this guy or not? And therefore, once we have this, so therefore we have kind of a chazaka against a chazaka. And that now we have that now on the one hand we have the chazaka that Balabais toted b'poylov, but on the other hand we have also the chazaka that the Balabais is not going to want to be over on all these yisurim, because we assume a yid has a cheskas kashrus, he doesn't want to knowingly be over on an avera, so therefore at that point we don't have the bori v'shema that we had before, and therefore we can't say that the socher is nishba v'noto. So Tosfos asks the question actually why are we saying Nishba Socher V'Noto? Why should the Balabais say, look, at the moment I don't remember, instead of you swearing and collecting, and from my point of view, you might be collecting your salary double. Instead, I don't remember now. Wait till Alois HaShachar, and I'll remember by that time. When it comes the deadline, I'll make sure to remember or not. Why should we have the guy swear in between? And Tosfos says, because this chazaka only helps where you also have, on the other hand, opposite it, you have also the chazaka that a socher is not going to wait too long to demand his pay. The socher himself wants to be paid as soon as possible. So if the Balabais is able to tell him, wait till Alois HaShachar, then you don't really have that chazaka in the first place, because then he's not delaying. So the very fact that we say that there's a chazaka that the socher wants to be paid as soon as possible means, therefore, that... So you need, in other words, two chazokas to work together, that the owner doesn't want to be over on baltolin, and that the worker wants to be paid as soon as possible. Therefore, if we allowed him to say, wait till alos hashachar, then you wouldn't have that chazaka, then you wouldn't have that double chazaka, therefore that wouldn't help. And therefore, during the time, we tell the balabais, instead of making him wait till alos hashachar, he gets to swear now. So that's what the Gemara says. So what do you mean? You're telling me that the balabais is going to make sure not to be over on baltolin. The flip side of it is the socher. Do we suspect that the socher is going to be over on baltigzol, on stealing, and taking his salary double? And the answer is hosam tre chazoki hocha chazaka, because you have two chazakas versus one. When it comes after the time, then you have two chazakas, namely gabe balabais ikatre chazaki. When it comes after the time, then you have two chazakas. Choder de ein balabais over mishum baltolin. Number one, the balabais will not have wanted to be over on baltolin, and therefore he wouldn't have allowed the deadline to pass without remembering. But choder de ein socher masha schore, and two, that the socher himself is not going to delay getting his payment any longer than necessary. But hocha, whereas the socher has only choder chazaka, only the one chazaka of not being over on baltigzol. So therefore, when it's after the time, now the balabais' case is stronger, and therefore he can tell the socher, now you don't have the ability to swear and collect anymore, as opposed to until now, we would say that until then you didn't have two chazakas, because until the time is over, you don't yet have that the balabais has not yet been over on lois solin. And therefore, it's one against one, and therefore we said it's more like a body and shema claim, and therefore now at that point the socher is able to swear and collect. Okay, and Tosfos also points out the detail that the chazaka of the balabais is not quite as strong as the chazaka of the socher, because after all the balabais may not remember. On the other hand, the chazaka that ain socher masha schore, that the socher wants to be paid as soon as possible, is a stronger chazaka. But again, after the zman, then we don't say that, because against that we do have. The fact is, there is a logical reason to say, number one, why'd you wait until after the zman? And number two, the fact is the balabais himself does not want to be over on baltigzo. And it's true, though, that first chazaka on the worker is stronger than the chazaka on the balabais.